Welcome to Season 3 of Gill Athletics Connection Podcast. If this is your first time here, we're so excited you hit the play button today. If you like what you hear, check out our library of hundreds of past guests that is sure to give you value. For everyone else, we're so happy you've come back. Quick favor, if you haven't already, consider taking a minute to rate and review the podcast. This simple act helps amplify these amazing stories, and we just love to hear your feedback. Heck, we may even read it out loud in a future episode. Okay, that's enough of an intro, right? Let's get to it, see what today's guest has in store for us.
All right, thanks again for joining us here on the podcast. I am super excited here to be your host, Mike Cunningham. And, you know, today's going to be a fun one. We haven't even recorded yet. I'm just already putting blessings that this is going to be a fun one. So let's jump into it. Help me welcome today's guest, the wise, the wonderful Mr. Doug Edgar. Doug, how are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me, Mike.
You are the happy for you to be here, man. This is pretty exciting. We've actually been working on this one for a while. So I love when, you know, it kind of feels better actually when it takes a while to get it going and get it scheduled. It feels like, you know, the anticipation's built up. And so I put a lot of pressure that this is going to be awesome, Doug, which means the pressure's all on you.
that's going to be a tough one to live up to.
Well, I think we're going to see you've been put in some pressure situations and you've handled it quite fine. So I'm excited about that. Doug, you, serve as the, is your first official title director or head men and women's track coach at Indiana Tech?
Yeah, I'm the head track and field coach at Indiana Tech.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Indiana Tech, I don't know that a lot of people know this. So I went to school at Illinois Institute of Technology. So we call ourselves Illinois Tech, right? But I think in every state there is a Institute of Technology. The most famous ones, of course, are Georgia Tech and MIT, which they should be called Mass Tech, by the way. I don't know why they go to these initials, but Indiana Tech, that the official name is Indiana Institute of Technology, right?
It is correct. Yeah. And just for athletic purposes, we shortened that to Indiana Tech. But yeah, our official designation is Indiana Institute of Technology.
Yeah, that's cool. So is that school at Illinois Tech? It's a lot of engineering. This is going to be a shocker. I was a computer engineer for a year. I couldn't handle it. Is that what most of the majors kind of are at Indiana Tech?
That's what the school started as, was an engineering college. It was actually Indiana Engineering College when it first began. But we've actually expanded. And so honestly, now on my roster, maybe about 20% of my roster is in the engineering field. We've got, you know, criminal justice is a very big one for us, psychology. We've got a growing exercise science major as well in biology. And so, you know, we've diversified quite a bit when it comes to our offerings, but definitely started primarily as an engineering college.
And how big is the school? Most of the schools that I know of that are like Illinois Tech, I think maybe we had 1,000 students, maybe. What's Indiana Tech look like?
Yeah. So traditional undergrad, we're about 1500 on our day campus. And we have, I don't know what we're at now, 8 or 9 satellite campuses kind of throughout the Midwest that are kind of geared more towards adult learning, night learning, continuing education. But on our traditional campus here, we have about 1500.
That's cool. Well, let's get into it, man. Super excited to learn more about you and your journey. And it's pretty exciting. I mean, you know, spoiler alert, this guy's won national titles. That's a pretty hard thing to do. So just really excited to learn kind of your development and really kind of a little bit like how we did with Sue Parks, like broke down her formula for winning a title on a conference level. Kind of talk about how you built Indiana Tech up to being a big old trophy winner, because I think that's going to be valuable for people listening today. So Doug, why don't we kind of, I'm a comic book guy. I don't know. Are you a Marvel cinematic, are you a Spider-Man guy or anything?
Yeah. I love anything in that universe there.
My favorite part of those is the origin story, right? We learn how Spider-Man got bit and that's how he turned to Spider-Man. So this is kind of origin story for you, man. We're going to find out how Super Doug became Super Doug here. Where does track and field start for you? Were you a age group kid, high school? Maybe you didn't do track at all.
Yeah, I guess, compared to most, I was probably a little late to track and field. I didn't start until 5th grade. And it was really just, I was one of the fast kids on the playground and the track coach was like, hey, you know, you're kind of fast out here at recess. And so came out and it was kind of my second sport. I played soccer since I was super young, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and kind of always thought that was my sport. And obviously I'm here in Indiana. So basketball, every Indiana kid plays basketball. And so I didn't really have, you know, that spring sport when I was growing up, and just did soccer again or camps and clinics. And then started with 5th grade and saw a little bit of success and then kind of grew. And I think my goal every year was to, they had like an award for whoever was the best at the most events. And so I would run everything from the 100 to the mile and, you know, try to high jump and long jump. And that was my goal. I wanted to win that award every year, was, you know, who could be the best across more events than anybody else.
That's a really cool award, especially at a younger age, and encouraging people to try different events. But that's really cool. Instead of just the fastest kid in the school, or, you know, the MVP or whatnot, who's the best over multiple events. That's pretty cool. We need more of that in the young elementary and middle school. That's really cool, man. Where, so as you're growing up here and you're doing soccer, and if you said you grew up in Indiana, which I knew exactly it was going to be basketball, because that's just in your blood for being in Indiana. Where did you grow up? We know Indiana Tech is in Fort Wayne. Did you grow up in the Northeast Indiana?
Yeah, I actually born and raised in Fort Wayne. So all the way through high school, was here in Fort Wayne, and then took a step away for a couple of years at Anderson University, and then right back here to Fort Wayne.
Now, if we said this before we hit the record button, I did fifth grade in a little town just east of Fort Wayne called Woodburn, but I knew of the Fort Wayne high schools, which, I mean, there's some pretty big and pretty good high schools. What high school did you go to out there?
Yeah, so I actually went to Concordia Lutheran, which is one of the smaller high schools here in Fort Wayne. So not one of the massive ones. We've got some 2,000-4,000 person high schools, but we were about, when I went there, I think there was about 800. I think they're probably around 700 to 750 now.
I think, you know, I coached at Ball State for a couple of years. I'm pretty sure, for sure, I had to have recruited some kids from Concordia Lutheran. I think I signed a kid or two.
If you were there when Amber Williams was there,
I was right before her, but I 100% knew Amber because she came in right after me and destroyed every record that I tried to put up there with our kids. That's for sure. She's a Concordia Lutheran girl. That's awesome, man. Love her to death, by the way. She's awesome. Love her. That's so cool. Tell me about high school. You said, you know, in elementary school, you were always trying to win the all around award, if you will, which I still love that. That's so cool, man. I really love that. Did you in high school continue that? Were you doing some sprinting, jumping and throwing, or did you kind of focus in on certain events?
Yeah, as I moved on to high school, I started out as a sprinter. You know, about seventh, eighth grade, I realized, you know, the all around award was good, but, you know, high jumping 5.6 or 5.7 for my school was good, but that doesn't do you a lot of good at the high school level. And so I started as a short sprinter, 100, 200. Concordia was actually the state champion here in Indiana my eighth grade year. And so they are, I don't know if anyone's passed it to now, but kind of in this last, you know, 20, 30 years, we have a one class system here in Indiana at the state level. And so they are, if they're not the smallest, they're one of the smallest teams to win the state championship. And so they won that my eighth grade year. And then I moved into high school, and they had, I think, about 90% of that roster was back. And so there were very high expectations of that group. And I was kind of coming in as a freshman, and, you know, you always think you're big stuff, and, you know, I was the best, you know, one of the best kids in the city, but, you know, I'm coming to a team that had the defending state champ in the 100, you know, and, you know, a 400, you know, state title contender. And so, I got kind of a big break. We had just some kind of small injuries, and, Northside Relays used to be a very big meet here in Fort Wayne. And, I got thrown onto the sprint medley. They put me on the 200 leg. I had, you know, two guys from the state champion 4x1, you know, leading it off. You know, we do 1-1-2-4 here in the Midwest. So, those two led off, gave me a great position, and I was handing off to the guy that would end up winning the state title in the 400 that year. So I think we still have the sprint medley record at Concordia. But yeah, I kind of stepped into a team that was really, really good and got some experience. I ended up kind of being the fifth guy on the 4x1. So got to go to state, but didn't get to compete at state, but was able to get enough varsity points to get that letter jacket freshman year there. So that was kind of my big, like, felt good. You know, I made, you know, freshman soccer, but didn't make varsity soccer, but then had that opportunity to be my first varsity sport in high school was track.
I love the Indiana single class system. I mean, I have understanding about, like, why Texas has 6 or 7 or however many they have. Yeah, I grew up and ran high school track in Alabama, and when I was there, we had 6 classes, and I think they're up to 7 now. And that was about 4 too many classes. Illinois used to be a one, you know, big school, small school. I like that, but I like that, just put everybody together and let's just run. Let's see who cares if you got 100 kids in your school or 10,000. Let's win it. So when you come into your freshman year and you're coming, you know, you're joining a state championship team, they return 90%, you know, some kids could feel almost, they would almost shirk that, like, oh man, who, like, maybe I shouldn't join the team. Like, they're too good for me. Others could be kind of the opposite and like, oh yeah, I'll show those guys. I'm the all around champ, by the way, boys. We're going to show you what a real athlete is. Do you remember kind of like your attitude of joining that team of like, was it more of like, okay, I get to be around other fast kids, so hopefully I'll get faster and contribute? Or was it a shirking? What was kind of your attitude as an athlete that freshman year joining that really good team?
Yeah, I think early on it was incredibly intimidating. Like I said, I mean, these are guys that are the best in the state that are on that team. A couple of them are in the Indiana Hall of Fame now for high school athletes. And so I think it took until I started winning some of the, you know, the JV reserve level meets, and some of those varsity guys are like, hey, like, you know, he might be one of the guys, you know, he's not, you know, there yet. But I think a lot of our upperclassmen then kind of started to, you know, see that, oh, you know, I think once they see you're good, they kind of call you in and they bring you in and they say, all right, well, you know, now, you know, you did that before. So now you got to do some of these things with us, and you start changing the way you warm up, and, you know, they put you through some extra things. And so I think I was lucky in that, you know, our school is small and some of those upperclassmen did invest back into me and say, you know, hey, you know, you could really be something good and you can help us, you know, right now. And so I was able to, like I said, get some varsity experience. You know, I got to run a couple of relays here and there, got to go to a meet called the Max Truex Invitational at Warsaw, where they combine two people's performances for every event. So you run two heats of the 100 and, you know, they basically add your times together and that's how you win the 100. And so we had an injury. And so I got to run the 100 with a guy that was an all-state 100 runner as my partner. And so obviously a meet like that, you don't want to let that guy down, let alone the whole team. And so some unique experiences like that kind of gave me that chance to kind of dip my foot into the varsity pool, but I didn't have to come in and be the guy by any means. I was one of the guys, but I was at the back of the guy group.
That's an interesting track meet, adding the times together, because I'm reminded about like relays. You know, some of us as coaches have had that kid who, you know, just doesn't do that well in the open, but put him or her in a relay and they come alive. And I always thought, well, it's because they're running for someone else, not themselves anymore. It's like, I've got that team name across my jersey. I need to represent the other three people. This is something similar to that. You're like, you weren't just some B team 100 meter guy at that race. You were like, oh no, my time counts. And it's with our A guy. So I need, I don't want to be embarrass him. I need to step up. So you probably ran one of your better times at that meet or at that point in your career.
Well, the ironic part is I was filling in, the state champion had the injury. And so I had to run in the fast heat with all the fastest of the guys. I hopefully maybe have blocked that out of my memory. I don't know what place I got. My time was okay. We ended up winning the 100 between the two of us, I think, for the day. But I got put with the big dogs. And so it was definitely trial by fire. You know, when you get thrown out there and it's the A heat and you haven't been running A varsity heats.
You're like, this is the A heat. I'm not sure I'm the A runner, but here I am. Mm-hmm. You know, you have hindsight now. You know, you've gone through college running and college coaching and at a high level. When you think back to your coaches, through, I assume you stayed sprinting all the way through. Talk to us about the coaches you had and the style of training, not the X's and O's. You know, we don't get into that, but what was your influence from your coaching staff there as a high schooler?
Yeah. My freshman year, we had Coach Ken, and that was actually his only year at Concordia. He transitioned to end up coaching at Carroll High School, which is one of those, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 person high schools. And after he left, Brad Peterson took over as kind of my event coach. Lance Hoffman was our head coach at the time. And they were both teachers in the building and kind of took me in a little bit different direction. I started to progress a little bit longer in my running. And so as a freshman, I was kind of 100, 200 oriented. As I moved to sophomore, I became more 200 and 400 oriented. Started to run on our team's 4x4 a little bit more. And then eventually, as I moved older and even into my junior year, I then also ran in the 4x8 relay. And so my senior year at both sectionals and regionals, I ran all three relays for our team. So I ran 4x1, 4x4, 4x8, and kind of that one day setting. And so, you know, maybe a product of the small school setup, but, you know, I felt like my best asset when I was in high school was just that I was going to work. You know, I came from a lot of guys before me that were just very hard-nosed, very hardworking there at Concordia. And Brad was definitely a coach that was going to put a lot of work in. Like we did, you know, we were, I would say a higher volume program, you know, than what I had done the year before. And obviously it paid great dividends for me. I really developed into being a 400 guy, but I was always, you know, you mentioned it. I was just always a relay guy. I loved the, any aspect of a relay. I think 90% of the 4x8s I ran on, I threw up after. It was definitely maybe a little long from what I thought I could do, but I got pushed to that level, and we had some really strong relays, and I had a lot of fun moving up and doing those events. And honestly, I really grew to love probably the 400, I would say, was my passion. But didn't mind running on the 4x8s. The open eight was a different story, but a 4x8 relay was a good time.
You know, it's a good thing high school is only 4 years. If it was 5 or 6, you might have been running the mile and the 2 mile by the time it was all done, man. I'm glad you just had 4 years and kind of find your niche in there. That's good. So as you enter senior year, what are you thinking for school? Are you thinking you can run on the next level, or what's kind of going through your mind on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd start, you know, the letters start to come in, and obviously, you know, they're kind of the general letter that everybody gets. But then my head coach, like I mentioned, Brad, was really good about kind of, you know, calling around to different schools and kind of getting my name out there a little bit. You know, definitely knew I wanted to stay in the Midwest. It was, and so I had looked really hard at that time. Ball State still had a men's program. Mm-hmm. They were probably my biggest desire, just from a location standpoint, it was getting out of Fort Wayne. Yeah. But it was, you know, still a really good program, you know, Division I program. The University of Indianapolis, when Coach Giles was there, was another program that I spoke to quite a bit. And then honestly, PFW here in town, Purdue Fort Wayne. Right. Back then it was Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne. They still had a men's program at that point as well. So kind of a rough year for men's programs in Indiana as I'm a senior in high school. Ball State drops their men's program, which was where I was most likely headed. PFW drops their men's program. And so I stopped getting the letters. The calls stopped coming, the letters stopped coming, and you just wonder, well, what happened? And so that's what kind of led me to start maybe returning some of those other phone calls that I had been ignoring, that now as a coach, you get a little upset about, but you know, you understand maybe at the high school level. And Anderson is a school that had called me probably almost every week. Coach Scott Worry was the sprint coach at the time. And, he probably called me, you know, every week, every other week. And honestly, I had my heart set on Ball State and thought that's where I was going to go. And so, you know, you kind of blow them off and say, yeah, I'll take a visit. And well, maybe next week. I'm kind of busy this week. And, you know, eventually ended up taking my visit to Anderson, and they had phenomenal facilities. They had just built that indoor that was there at the time. And, Coach Maddox was the head coach and had a ton of success. And, a lot of those athletes that were at Ball State or, you know, at PFW had started to transition over to that roster at Anderson University. And so I met with a guy named Mike Harris on my visit, and he was probably one of the most influential people in me going to Anderson, kind of brought me in, showed me, you know, what they did there, what it could be, ate lunch with me. And so that kind of really sold me on the program.
What year did you actually take an official visit to Ball State?
So I did not take an official visit. They had, I think they cut the, 03 was my senior year of high school. And so they had, I think it was about January. They had, you know, sent me letters in the mail. I was like, all right, well, you know, I think I'm going to put some stuff up here during track season. But, you know, once I have those marks, but Brad actually went to Ball State. And so I think he had some conversations and just we were hopeful, you know. I was probably on the edge of what could help a MAC program, but even at a walk-on situation, I think I could have come in and hopefully been an asset to Ball State.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was trying to think the timing, because even though I worked on the women's side, 02 and 03, the men's head coach at the time, Jim Sprecher, is now the head coach at Lynchburg, was a, you know, great friend of mine. So like almost every recruit, especially sprints and hurdles recruits, mm-hmm. I still met all the men. Like, you probably know Matt Conley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Matt was a freshman on our team, even though he's a thrower and a guy, I still, you know, knew him. So I was wondering, I was like, man, did we cross paths in Muncie? Yeah, that would have been pretty funny there. So you end up going to Anderson. Sounds like Mark Harris or Marcus Harris was a big influence on you going there. What were you thinking academically, and what were you thinking like career-wise? You know, back when I was a senior, I still thought I was going to be like a firefighter or an astronaut. But what were you thinking going into studying and becoming a professional?
Yeah, I went to Anderson thinking I was going to major in biology education.
Yeah, big and teacher school, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm, you know, great education program, and I thought, yeah, you know, I've done, you know, environmental science. I've done some of these science classes. Like, I think I want to do this, and I realized about week two that biology was not me. I was the only person in my class that was not pre-med, and I'm starting to add up dollar signs. We're doing the same undergrad, and your salary is going to have an extra zero behind it. And this is going to be a rough go of it for me. You know, I was spending, 2, 3, 4 hours a night in the lab, just, and it just did not click. My brain did not work in that biology realm. I kind of limped through that freshman year. I passed. I was eligible. I didn't miss any track meets. It wasn't my, you know, what wasn't a stellar GPA. I was kind of that middle straight C-, C-, C+ kind of in everything, but I survived and ended up changing my major to social studies education. Had always been interested in history to a degree and kind of delved into that path and really felt like it was the right fit for me once I got into it. I think my hidden talent is that I can just bang out long papers. Like I can sit down and knock out a 20, 30 page paper. And when you're a history major, it's all about, you know, research, putting it on papers. And so I think that's one of my abilities that really delved me into that side of things. So
I feel like that does not help you as a coach for some reason. As soon as a coach puts out a 30 page paper, it was like, look, man, I'm not reading that. Can you give me like the 2-sentence syllabus on this thing?
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem with my team itineraries. I'm handing them a packet every week and saying there's a lot of info we need to know here, guys. So I give you every bit of information. So
at that point, you're still thinking teaching. Was coaching in your mind at all, or was it more just teaching and like, oh, maybe I'll become a coach, or maybe I'll also coach, but it was teacher first?
Yeah, I mean, I think going into high school, I always thought soccer would be my path. Like that was my better sport, you know, really through probably my sophomore year of high school. I would just thought I knew more about it. Like if I'm gonna coach with teaching, it'll probably be, you know, at the high school you coach multiple sports, but I think I'll coach, you know, soccer, you know, maybe do track if that's available.
Yeah, but that's after still on the back burner there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit. So after my freshman year, I finished my freshman year and all of my coaches were still at Concordia. And so obviously college, you get out a little bit before high school gets out. And so they allowed me to come back and kind of help with the 400 group, you know, run some of the workouts. You know, they kind of had everything planned, but they're like, you know, hey, we would, you know, love to help timing. And so I was back just in time for the SAC conference track meet there. And so that was kind of probably, you know, maybe that's your light bulb moment. Like, you know, I got to see a meet that I had a lot of success at, that I really enjoyed, that's incredibly competitive here in Fort Wayne. And, you know, you get to see athletes either have success or not have success with training that you gave them, you know, for a couple of weeks. And so that was kind of really my first coaching moment there was after that freshman year.
Was the, you know, we talked about Spider-Man and the spider bite, right? Was that the moment it hit you, or was it still like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, good, I'll coach soccer and now I'll at least know what I'm doing coaching track, even though I'm a track runner at that point? Or did it like was it like this aha, oh my gosh, this is what I was put on earth for?
Yeah, I don't know if it really, I wouldn't say that's the moment it sank in for me. You know, I did it, I enjoyed it, I liked giving back. You know, as a runner, I felt like I was always like the guy that coaches would yell at for getting too excited for other people. Like, you know, I'm jumping up and down for the 2-miler while, you know, the 4x4 is going on. And they're like, hey, you know, save your energy. Like, you got to run in 10 minutes. Like, sure. You know, and so I've just always been really passionate about, you know, other people's PRs and getting them to that level. So I think I saw that value in it, but I ended up not coaching again after my sophomore year, just the way my, you know, job and summer internship setup kind of went. And then after my sophomore year, I decided not to run track anymore for Anderson University. Coach Maddox, who was their longtime coach, he retired after my freshman year. I stayed on one more year, kind of had, you know, just probably the worst year of my career at any level, lots of injuries. And it just, I kind of really, at that point, kind of lost my love of track and field a little bit after that sophomore year. So kind of got away from it. Going into the summer, actually went out for the soccer team as the junior in college. I didn't play my first 2 years, made the soccer team there at Anderson University, but had the opportunity then through a connection, Derek Leininger, to coach track and field. He knew a coach at a school called Muncie South, which, you know, Muncie's about obviously, you know, 30 minutes there from Anderson. And Coach Kelly Leach was looking for an assistant. He's kind of a distance guy and kind of had really revamped the school. And Derek's like, hey, you know, I know you've kind of talked about coaching. I don't know if you're still interested, but he kind of connected me with Coach Leach and went and interviewed. And he, you know, he gave me the opportunity. I don't know what he saw, but he gave me kind of that chance. And so that kind of got me back into track and field. And I would say those 3 years that I spent at Muncie South are kind of, you know, that spider bite moment you mentioned, that really gave me that enthusiasm for coaching track and field specifically.
I love that. You know, it really made me picture and we're going to talk about this later about Twitter specifically, but I'm a big Twitter guy, right? So I'm a big social media guy. And I know you're on there too. And like I said, we're going to talk about the role social media plays with your coaching staff and recruiting, things like that. But I'm always, when you were talking about that, I'm picturing that picture of like, there's two like guys riding a bike, right? And one of them says, this is what you think your career or, you know, your running career looks like. And it's just a straight up, you know, from the bottom to the top. And it's like, oh, there's no hills, no. And then reality is there's dips and doopsie-doos and setbacks. I fully expected you to tell me you had an amazing college career and someone like a Coach Maddox, who I know Coach Maddox dearly, love him and his wife. You know, Coach Maddox was, you know, there the whole time and was such a huge influence. And I wanted to be like Coach Maddox, and that's why I got into coaching. But instead, here's this dips and dives and setbacks. You have a sophomore year where you're injured a lot. You kind of lose any love that you had for track, and you step away from it, go back to one of your original loves, soccer. I love that you still kept at it, though. It wasn't like, okay, well, I'll just be a student and, you know, go to penny beer nights and stuff like that. I love that. And then the opportunity to coach came up again. And you're like, all right, let's try it. And I assume this is where the story continues to now go up. That's so inspiring, Doug, because there's plenty of athletes out there right now that want to be coaches, and they think it is going to be linear. Like, oh man, because I go to XYZ school, or because I'm this talented, because I know this coach, I'm going to be the head coach of Texas A&M next year. and there's other people that get injured, or for one reason or another, can't run on their teams. And they think, I can never do it. Like, I can't be a track coach. I didn't even finish my high school career or my college career. And your story, as we're going to continue to play it out here, shows that there's, I don't want to call it redemption, because that sounds like, like, you know, you did something bad or something, you know what I'm saying? But like, there is hope, no matter what your starting looks like, whatever the start looks like, you still got to go run the race, and that race can still be awesome. That's so, I love this, man. I'm super excited about this. So tell me about Muncie South. I know Muncie South really well, because I was at Ball State for 2 years. So I know all those Muncie Centrals and South, and there's some just good kind of down to the earth coaches in that area, man, that just really care about track. Did you coach sprinters there, and how did that go?
Yeah. So basically we had Kelly Leach, like I said, was the head coach, and he had kind of really gotten the distance side going. So Muncie South, not known for track and field. They hadn't won a sectional, and I'm probably gonna say this wrong, but it was at least 40 years, you know, it was 40 plus, you know. Central was the team, you know, they won around there. You had Jay County, you know, Anderson, both the Anderson Highland, and Anderson, and it's, you know, Muncie South was not a track program when Coach Leach got there, or a distance program. And he had really revamped the distance side of things, and basically said he needed someone to come in and do sprints and hurdles and kind of work with that group. And so the year before I took over, I think he had 12 total athletes on the track team. Wow. And that was mostly his distance, you know, 8-9 distance runners. And there were really 2 to 3 sprinters. So I'm thinking, you know, I'll help, but I mean, if it's 3 kids, you know, what am I going to do? But he was just you know, he's that prototypical, like in the hallway, like, hey, you do a sport, great, come do my sport too. Like, nice. And he, you know, he was a teacher in the building. And so he really just kind of got everybody out. And so our goal was just like, let's get the athletes out. Like, let's try to make this enjoyable. Let's get a group out. And so I think that first year we ended up with about 40 athletes. And really the big thing at Muncie South was just the eligibility side of things. So, you know, some schools had, you know, pass 5 or whatever, you know, whatever the rule was, but Muncie South also had a 2.0 rule. So you couldn't do sports unless you had a 2.0. And so a lot of athletes, you know, were used to pass 5 or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, our big thing every day is we did a 45 to an hour study hall before practice started every day. Like, just, we got to make sure we got some athletes out finally. You know, we need to make sure all of these athletes are eligible. And so that first year, you know, we had 1 or 2, you know, solid athletes. And, you know, we went from getting dead last at the sectional meet to, I want to say 3rd or 4th. And then Coach Leach asked me if I wanted to come out and kind of help with the cross country group the next year and just kind of, you know, be an extra person and help out. And, you know, that year he led the cross country team to a sectional championship, which they hadn't won one in cross. And I don't know if they'd ever won one at that point. And that kind of bled into our track season. We had a team of over 60. I think we had 72, 73 athletes that second year. Really got a lot of got the football coach on board, which is anybody who's ever coached high school knows you need the football coach on your side. Here in Indiana, your big battle is getting the AAU kids to come out that played basketball and then they age out of AAU their senior year. So I ended up with some really good high jumpers that came out and worked with me. And then we had a young man that transferred in from Richmond High School that was just a world beater. I mean, this is a kid that went out first indoor meet and he saw a high jump bar, had never done it before, still had on Timberlands and cleared 6'6", like just messing around. Like he's like, I bet I could clear that. And so he was a very good athlete, you know, and once you start to get a couple of those transformational athletes, it really helps sell it to some of the football guys and everything. And so that year we ended up winning the sectional title, took some athletes to the regional meet. We unfortunately had two athletes get in a three-wheeler accident the week of regionals. And at that point I had a 4x2 that was all state during the indoor season. I kind of helped get some indoor athletes going. And we had a 4x1 that I think we were ranked, you know, seventh or eighth in the state going into the regional meet. Both of those guys didn't run. We ended up getting, you know, fourth or fifth, missing state by a spot or two. But it was just really a transformational experience. You know, I think the city was really invested. The school was great to work with. They threw a parade for the athletes. You know, they let them, you know, go in the parade. And Muncie South is known for their marching band. I don't know if you knew that from your time in Muncie, but so a lot of our athletes were kind of double dipping. They'd always been in the parade, but now they got to ride in the cars and kind of get some love from the city. So, wow. You know, those 3 years were great, you know, and I think that really transformed my idea of what a track and field coach could do and could be.
Man, healthy things grow. There's nothing that excites me more than hearing about a school that has 10 athletes and within 1, 2, 3 years, there's 60 athletes. That's always good. Even if not a single one of them goes on to run college, that's a product of a high school team. That's not the goal of the high school team. It's getting these kids out and doing an activity first and foremost. Second of all, love of track and field. Some of those kids are going to go on to become coaches their own, even if they don't compete on the college level. So that's cool, man. Healthy things grow. So I love hearing growth specifically in our sport of track and field. You said this was kind of your, how many years were you at Muncie South?
So I was there for 3 years. So it took me 5 years to get the undergrad degree, but
hey, no,
got
no,
it done.
No judgment, brother. Trust me. No judgment. You said this was kind of your, in those 3 years, as you're growing from, you know, 10 total kids with coach all the way up to, you know, 60 and a parade, I love uplifting track kids. That's awesome. And this became kind of your aha moment, like, oh, okay, this is what I want to do. Were you doing, and you're still an undergrad, so for sure, maybe no was the answer here. Are you doing any kind of coaching education at this point, even to the point of maybe going to the Indiana Track Clinic or anything like that? Or is it still kind of your coaching how you were coached?
Well, the one thing that's unique about Anderson is they actually offered a track and field class.
Larry taught that for a long time.
Yeah, Larry and then Scott Wilson and then Coach Worry, who was my sprint coach, they actually were the instructors. And so you essentially are doing level one instruction, but then it's learned by doing. So, you know, we would learn about the javelin and then we'd go over and they'd let us throw the javelin, you know? And so it's honestly probably the best way you could have ever done a true level one. And we actually had to take a test. I don't think it wasn't the USATF test, I don't believe, but we had like a test that we got certified in at the end of that semester. So I believe that would have been my junior year that I took that class. And so that kind of at least kind of gave me the basics, but definitely was very geared towards what worked for me in high school. Like I said, I didn't have what I felt like was the best college career based on what I did in high school. I had a good freshman year. I was, you know, all conference and, you know, did some things, but then that sophomore year really took that nosedive. And so I kind of went back to the higher volume. You know, I was our coach was a kind of a Clyde Hart at Baylor, you know, that packet that everyone looks at, you know, the repeat 200s, the, you know, the 300s, the cut downs. And I always valued the work. And I loved like that part of practice. Like you tell me I got 2200s at 31. Great. That's my day. You know, I saw more joy from that workout than ever competing, which is kind of a, you know, weird place to be as an athlete.
Completely weird. Yeah. I was going to say that. I'm glad you said it. Cause I was like, that's weird, Doug. Not many people right now are going, yeah, me too. Everybody else is like, well, you're crazy, man. Let me do a 4x1. I'm good.
You know? And so I think that's kind of where I was, but then I learned that at Muncie South, you know, you can't tell those kids to do 20 by 200 when they've never done track a day in their life, you know? And so, you know, I'm out there trying to modify it. And, you know, and ironically, it got closer to the program that I did at Anderson than what I did at high school, mostly just from trying to get those kids to enjoy that sport and see some value in it.
Yeah, I'd say I like how you realize that though. So a lot of coaches, especially as they get, now you're young in your coaching career at that point, but as we get later on in our age and stage of coaching, we have our way. Like, you know, we've done a lot of coaching education, a lot of trial and error, a lot of mentorship, things like that. And we kind of have our way, and the good ones still learn and, you know, tweak at that point, but you have your system, right? And sometimes those coaches will go to a different program. Well, this is how I do it, so this is what I'm going to do, without any regard to the other aspects of your program, whether it's a brand new program. Is the training age zero for 90% of the kids? Is it a high level, like a Concordia Lutheran? Did you come in that freshman year? It's like, oh, yeah, that I'm taking over a team that just won state. Okay, they're probably a little bit more advanced, and maybe I can throw more at them, et cetera. So I like how you had that self-awareness of like, oh, okay, I think this is how I, my style of coaching, but that won't work right now. I'll have zero on the team. I'll go from 10 to zero real quick here. So I like that you had that self-awareness. I bet that plays into your story as we continue out. There's usually themes that run amongst people's journey. So I like that. So what do you do? How do you take this? You do 3 years at Muncie South. How do you take, what's the next step? You're a track coach now. So what's next?
Yeah. And so it was the Derek Leininger name that I mentioned. He was the head coach at Snyder at the time. And so I had some, you know, preliminary conversations like, you know, if I get a teaching job in Fort Wayne, you know, what would that look like? At the same time, this program at Indiana Tech is firing up. And the initial head coach at Indiana Tech is Brad Peterson, who was my high school coach. And so he and his father, Barry Peterson, who was a longtime Northrop coach here in Fort Wayne, basically start a from scratch program at Indiana Tech. So that's happening as I'm a senior, you know, my second senior year at Anderson. That program's kind of getting up and running and doing its thing. And so, you know, same thing, you know, Brad's like, hey, if you can find your way back to Fort Wayne, would love to have you to be part of the program. This is kind of where we're at. And so I'm kind of having both these conversations at the same time. Obviously you're always thinking in the back of your head, man, like college would be awesome. Like that's just a different level. Like I've coached high school and I would love it. You know, Snyder was a great program and I ran against them. And so I interviewed all, you know, all over. I was, you know, it was at that time a really tough teaching market to break into, and ended up getting hired on as a social studies teacher at Norwell High School. And so that's about 30 to 35 minutes away from Indiana Tech's campus, and basically sat down with Brad and said, hey, you know, this is kind of my schedule. I could be to campus by 3:45 every day. Is that something you can work with? And he's like, yeah, we actually have an opening working with sprints. We have somebody that's kind of covering hurdles, somebody that kind of has everything else, but basically I got to work alongside him on the sprint side of things. And so I think part of me getting hired at Norwell was that I was supposed to coach a bunch of sports, and then I pivoted real quick. And I don't think that did make me a lot of friends in the athletic department when I was like, well, sorry, I can't coach, you know, soccer and track and some of these things that maybe were part of helping me get that job.
Yeah, I was going to ask, why didn't you coach at the high school? Was it more of working with Brad, you know, your former coach, or was it more of like, oh, I get my college shot? I didn't even know if I was going to have that. Like, it doesn't sound like that was kind of in your goal set of like, I want to coach college, but it was like, oh, here's the opportunity to do it. So sorry, guys, I've got to go do this. Is that more?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was just really it. It was, you know, I know, you know, I guess maybe you're naive at the time, but you're like, man, I don't think everyone just gets to jump into college, you know? And so I was like, well, this might be my only shot to try this. And maybe you do it for a year or two and you don't like it or you're not good at it, but at least you can say you made that attempt. And, right. And I didn't know if I was going to stay in Fort Wayne forever or if I was going to move. And so maybe this was my one attempt to really move into collegiate coaching and have that opportunity.
So did your first position at Indiana Tech start, was that a volunteer coaching position or did you get a stipend?
I got a little stipend. I got paid. So that was nice. And so I was a part-time coach and basically was, you know, there 2 to 3 hours a day. And then I used every bit of PTO I could get to go to some of those away meets. And, you know, a lot of Fridays I would, you know, okay, well, I'm going to leave half day and the team may go down to IU or, you know, up to Grand Valley State or something like that. And me and my wife would just get in the car and we would drive and get up there, you know, and use a half day at work. But it was definitely something that I was doing everything I could to make that part-time position work and see what would happen with it.
Tell me your wife is a track person as well, and you're not just dragging some poor Oh, no, not at all, huh?
Nope. My wife was softball and soccer were her true passions. And so her love of track has had to grow with us. And so she got trial by fire. You know, she did it while we were at Muncie South. We met actually, and you know, you talk about that winding journey. My wife went to Ball State. I was supposed to go to Ball State. You know, we've often talked, you know, we may not have ever connected if we had met each other as freshmen or sophomores in college. We may not have been the right fit at that point. So we met during that junior year when I started coaching in Muncie. And so it was kind of that overall positive experience. You know, you find your wife, you find your passion for coaching, you know, and so those long journeys, they, like you said, they're not linear, but they're definitely enjoyable moments along the way.
Another self-awareness mark there, Doug, because a lot of people think about that example you give there of my wife went to Ball State. I was supposed to go to Ball State. Man, wish I'd have went to Ball State. I'd have met her earlier. You know, we'd be this much longer in our relationship. And it's like, oh, you forget about the opposite. The opposite could be true. You could have never met her, or you guys could have dated, and because of your maturity levels at that point, hated each other, you know, would not have worked out, and you go and find someone else and she finds someone else, and you're in a 100% different life right now. So I love that self there. Another, like I said, self-awareness there where you're like, yeah, I'm kind of glad that it worked out exactly how it was supposed to. I met her in a different stage of my life, and she must be so patient if she's now on the track bandwagon. Thank you so much for what's her name?
Samantha.
Yeah. Okay. I know she's listening right now, so I did not want to say Miss Samantha's name incorrect. So Samantha, God bless you. You must be unbelievably patient, because I know now you must be, you're track 24/7. You can't help it being married to this guy. I get it. You poor, poor soul sometimes. So you're at Indiana Tech. Now, I think as you're here at Indiana Tech as a part-time coach, you don't go anywhere else. Our story is we're at Indiana Tech from then till today. Is that correct?
Right. Yep. No other stops in between.
So give us, how did you go from part-time sprints coach to the head coach? What's the kind of, did you become full-time assistant and then whatever, you know, just tell us how that panned out.
Yeah. So I spend that first year there and everything's, you know, works out well, in my opinion. You know, we have some success. We're a new program. Again, this is only the second year that Indiana Tech has restarted that program. And so we start to see some athletes, you know, score some points at nationals. I think we're starting to be at least one of those teams people talk about at the national meet. You know, we're not by any means, you know, we're not in the top 20, but we have a couple athletes that at least people know we're at the meet. You know, it's always nice when people at least see a couple jerseys there. So ironically, after that year, Norwell cut 8 positions. So they had a reduction in force at the end of the year. I'm, you know, last guy in, first guy out when it comes to teaching education. And so I lose that position at Norwell. I end up basically just substitute teaching at Fort Wayne Community Schools, because I'm in at this point, I'm in on the coaching side of things. I've really decided that's the path that, you know, I eventually would like to coach full time. And so I'm like, all right, well, I've got to continue to make this work. We've got a good team. We've got a great recruiting class. Like, I think, you know, I can really make a name for myself here. Eventually kind of move into a semi full-time role with Fort Wayne Community, doing some like parent involvement, data collection and things like that. So that made things a little bit easier than just getting on the online server every morning and seeing what school I was going to be at. But ironically, halfway through that year, my head coach, he leaves. So he's no longer with Indiana Tech. And we bring in a new set of head coaches. So I'm still the assistant. A couple of the assistants stay, a couple of the assistants decide to go. But I stay with the program, and kind of write it out there for that year with a new set of coaches. And then that second year, that same set of coaches are there as well. Teams about 25, 30 athletes, lots of turnover from just kind of the coaching change and everything. And basically that year and a half, it's a lot of, these are the athletes that I'm starting to recruit. You know, I'm supposed to be doing this other job for Fort Wayne Community, and hopefully I'm past the statute of limitations, but I'm sending a lot of recruiting emails at this time. I mean, I'm doing 100 mailings a day. Like, I had it in my head that, you know, this is where that kind of grind mentality has got to come from. And I need to get athletes. You know, I want to have good athletes, and it's the same things that we did at Muncie South. You got to have numbers, you know, and so it starts with numbers. And so, you know, me and my wife are sitting in our living room at night, you know, putting mailers together, where I'm doing it at my actual job that's paying the bills. But it just kind of grew. And so I had some success in that first recruiting class. And at the end of what would have been my second full year as an assistant there, Basically the coaches that were in place were their contract was not renewed. And the athletic director just came and said, "Hey, you know, I've talked to a lot of the athletes and they feel like you would be the right fit. Is this something you would be interested in doing?" And obviously you're blown away. Like you're like, "Yeah, like I want to be a head coach." And so that kind of then took that pivot then to now finally getting to do that full time.
So let's pause right there. Go back to recruiting. You know, recruiting is an interesting activity that you really don't know what it's about until you're in it. How was that? Because recruiting obviously plays a big part in what you and your staff does at Indiana Tech, probably back then and even now as you've moved on to continue to grow the team and grow the – definitely everybody knows that Indiana Tech is at the national meet now. Okay, it's very fair to say we see orange everywhere there, right? What was your first – reaction to recruiting? How did you like it? It seems like you took to it pretty quickly. Like, okay, this is I think you used the word grind, like a grind mentality. Like I've got to just, it's got to drip. It's got to keep going, but it's got to go all the time. What was recruiting to you at first and how has that grown till to today?
Yeah, I think I just have to give credit to EA Sports. I mean, NCAA college football, trying to sign all those guys. I mean, that was every year, you know, you got to grind on college football. Like I need the five stars. Like I'm trying to turn Ball State into a power and move them into the Big Ten, you know? And so I think that's where that started. It's weird, but I mean, like every day, you know, you got to send them the letters, you got to make the calls. Like it's weird. So, you know, EA Sports, I think they, hopefully they bring the game back. I might lose some hours. I might finally get my wife to get me a new system. But yeah, I mean, I had it in my head that it was just about, you just got to send the information, you know? And I think early on, it was just trying to figure out, like, how do you get this information to the athletes? You know, I don't think I really understood that part of it really well of like, you know, I know this kid is good, but how do I get in touch with that athlete? Like, I don't know. I see the name, but so I just kind of started sending everything to the school and said, "Hey, well, at least I think they'll get it," you know? And then I started hitting every recruiting website I could find information on. And then I just started calling and people didn't really text very much back then. So it was literally just calls, emails, and letters. And I was just doing it probably five, paid some strong dividends with some of those athletes that I was able to make connections with and sign in that first recruiting class. You know, I think the hardest part for me was, like I mentioned, we had all that changeover with the head coach. And so I never really had the opportunity to really learn that from anyone. You know, like I said, the first coach leaves, we have an interim coach for a couple of months, and then we have a new set of coaches. And so there was, you know, everyone was kind of triage, I think, you know, with new program, interim, and then a new coach that was only there for, you know, about a year and a half. And so it was just kind of trial by fire and everything I did. I never really had someone say, "Hey, you know, this is how you recruit. Like, these are the best ways. Here's how to get a hold of people." And so I never had that. So that's all I've ever known is, let's work.
You mentioned not a lot of, you know, texting wasn't as popular as it is today. Social media wasn't what it is today. So he has a lot of letter writing, phone calling, prayer, like, please let this person see this letter and fill out my questionnaire. Did you, on the recruiting side, we're going to get into the head coaching side here in a second. You talked about, you know, no one was there to sit you down and say, "Hey, here's how we recruit," or "Here's how I recruit," and take that now and do your style. But were you reaching out to any other coaches at this point? Now, you're fully a college coach. Were there people at other schools or former athletes that were maybe coaching at that point that you would, you know, bounce ideas off at all? Or are you still kind of like, "I'm just trying to figure it out on my own world" at this point?
Yeah, probably to a fault. I was probably a little insulated. You know, I think I just kind of said, "Hey, I'm going to figure out how to tackle this." You know, I had some conversations. Rod Waters at the time, he started as an assistant with me and then moved on to be a head coach at Trine University. And so I think Rod's a person I would bounce a lot of training ideas off of. But I think I just kind of had it in my head that this is going to be the way I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe to a fault, I didn't ask enough people early. Like, is there a better way? Like, do I need to sit in my living room with my wife for 4 hours while we're watching TV, just dropping everything in envelopes and going to the Indiana Tech post office the next day with 300 packets to send out, you know? And so I think I maybe wasn't as efficient as I could have been early on, but it seemed to me that work was going to equal results, you know, and maybe over the years, I've hopefully gotten a little bit better and a little bit smarter about how I use my time. But early on, it just was like, well, if I put in 30 hours, I'm going to get more athletes. Like, that's just how I thought about everything.
Now, I'm fascinated when an assistant coach, especially an assistant coach, it's not like you were an assistant coach for 10, 20 years and, you know, you had a lot of experience, a pretty inexperienced assistant coach at this point. Is that fair at this point? I'm always fascinated when that type of coach becomes a head coach, because it doesn't matter what the size of the program, doesn't matter what level, high school, middle school, college, NAIA, D3, does not matter. It's different. You have different responsibilities. You have different expectations. You have a much more closer connection to your administration. Your administration actually says, hey, so how are you doing X, Y, and Z? When you're an assistant, administration hardly ever talks to you. The head coach talks to you. When you got the head coaching position, were you ready?
No, not even close. No, I spreadsheets, receipts, you know, all the stuff that has nothing, you know, you think, you know, like you said, you think you're like, all right, well, I've coached some athletes. I had two All-Americans last year. Like I'm 100% ready. And then that first day you're just looking around like, I got 30 things to do and none of them involve track and field coaching.
Right.
And I've never had anyone show me how to even you use any of these spreadsheets or software or these things. And so a lot of it, yeah, you're 100, no one is ready. If you haven't done it, I would, that's the first step I would tell everyone. You're not ready. Doesn't matter what you think, you're not ready yet.
What was, as you look back now, you know, one of the things we have now, as we've been in a position for 5, 10, 15 years, is we have perspective, right? We can look back and like, oh man, I wish I would have done this differently. Or, hey, thank goodness I fell into this or whatnot. What was, as people out there that are assistant coaches now, or even rookie head coaches that are trying to figure this out, no one sits down. There is no class called Head Coach of Track and Field 101. It just doesn't exist. Maybe we should USTF CCCA. That sounds right up our alley with the academy there. But what did you struggle with the most?
I think trying to balance it all and still have connections with your athletes. I think that's probably the hard part, because it's really easy to go sit in your office and say, listen, I got 5-6 hours of work to do. I'm shutting my door. Like, today's the day. And so my initial office we nicknamed it the fishbowl, because it was glass on all sides. It was in the back of the wellness center. So when the kids came to do their lifting, like, I'm there, like, there's no doubt if Coach Edgar's in the office or not, you know? And I think it's that balance of, I got to get stuff done, cause I don't want to do all this when I get home tonight. But at the same time, like, if you have an athlete that needs you and needs to have that conversation or needs to have that personal moment, whether it's, you know, class, personal life, whatever the case is, that initial balance, cause it's really easy to get caught up in the weeds of, you know, receipts and spreadsheets and discount rates and whatever your school, you know, budgets that your school values, and forget that at the end of the day, this is a human profession. And it's the point of doing this is breathing, you know, things into your young athletes and helping them along, you know, a tough journey that I'm not that far removed from at that point in time.
That's a really good point. And both sides, right? Meaning, for sure, when you become a head coach and you start learning all these budget meetings and scheduling and things like that, it could be very easy to spend 90% of your time without, because you always have something to do. So to spend 90% of the time there and reduce coaching and interaction with the athletes to a minimal, right? The other side of it's true too. Sometimes there's assistant coaches that want to be a head coach, but they think they can still do 90% of the human side of it. I love how you put that, in only 10% of the in-office time. And I don't think you can be successful. I'm not sure very many administrations would allow that as well. Sometimes assistant coaches are need to be assistant coaches, and that's not a negative. It's just, it's where your strengths are. So I love that you brought that up. Like, hey, it's the balancing act, I think is how you put it, of I have to take care of my humans, my team, but there's administration work that I am also responsible for. How many years have you been the head coach now at Indiana Tech?
So this will be year number 12 for me.
So as you are finding your way, trying to figure out the fishbowl, but also Excel and all that kind of fun stuff, when do you think you felt like you kind of hit your stride in those 12 years? Was it kind of immediate in year two, or maybe you're still like, yeah, you know what, Mike, I flounder at year 12. I still can't open up Excel.
Yeah. I mean, there's still days where you look at that to-do list and you're not checking very many numbers off. So I don't know if you ever
getting longer.
Yeah. You always keep adding, you know, I think we just put a lot of emphasis with those first couple of staffs that I had, like I said, on continuing that kind of, let's get the numbers up. So when I took over the team, including cross country, we had less than 40 athletes at that point. It was just so much changeover, you know, a lot of athletes transferred out. They just weren't, you know, happy with the situation. And so most of the athletes were left were ones that I had actively recruited, you know? And so that was kind of the nice start, but we brought in, I think, almost 50 athletes that first year. And that initial recruiting class, it was like 47 to 50. And it was just kind of that same idea of like, we got to grow this thing, you know? And so I think those first 2 to 3 years were really just about growth, you know, and I wanted to make sure that we were always a track team. You know, I think now obviously I see, you know, some programs kind of focused on jumps or throws or pole vault, you know, whatever their kind of niches, and whether that's facilities, coaches, you know, scholarship setup, but I've always just wanted to be a track team. You know, I wanted to have throwers and pole vaulters and sprinters, and I've just always gotten that joy out of track and field. Like I said, when I was an athlete, I would be yelling at my throwers on my team and our hurdlers. And so I've always wanted to build my program that way. And so I think it took us a couple of years to really get to that point, because obviously we were very sprints, hurdles heavy at that early stage, because that's what I was recruiting and spending the bulk of my time doing. But luckily that first season, our women were in a position where they were kind of already a little bit ahead of our men. And since I had been kind of coaching and recruiting that group for about 2 years, we had won the conference title my first year as a head coach. And so you're kind of like, all right, well, you know, like this is kind of a notch in the belt. Maybe I won't get fired after year one. Like, I'm not completely terrible at this, you know? And so, you know, the boys were maybe 2 or 3 years behind us, but it probably wasn't till, you know, 2012, 13, 14, when we were starting to really, you know, do things as a team. I think kind of the first, I feel like I belong here, was 2012. Our women got sixth at the indoor championship as a team. And, you know, you just kind of feel like at that time, you know, you still got some very heavy hitting programs, you know, Azusa Pacific, Oklahoma Baptist, Wayland Baptist. You've got programs that I've watched just kick our butts for the last 3 or 4 years. And now I can finally say, you know, like, hey, we're not there yet, but we're one of those teams now. We're in the top 10. And so I think that was probably my first, like, okay, like, I think I can really do this and really be a team here at Indiana Tech.
Now, this is fascinating, because you're talking about the conference championship wins. You have now, how many national titles is your team's won?
So we've won 14.
National titles?
National titles.
That's a few more than I thought. Holy cow. Okay, so 14 national titles. I see over your left shoulder, I'm very familiar with that wheel. That's a Penn Relays wheel, which means that a relay team did well at that great meet. You talked about your high school career. You know, by your senior year, you're running the 4x1, 4x2, 4x8, so team type. Where does that come from? That's a different mentality, because as the head coach, so you have all the power, right? So you have an allotment of scholarships. You could be like, hey, I'm the sprints and hurdles coach. 80%, we're going to look good because I'm going to recruit the best and give them all the best scholarships, and we're going to win this on a sprints and hurdles team because it's relay. You'd be justified. There's plenty of teams out there that are doing that, right? And then, you know, if we can get one good thrower, one good jumper, whatever, you know, great, because that'll help my team be sprinter hurdler dominated, right? Where does that team first mentality? I mean, that's the theme throughout this whole thing, is team first for you. You brought up right up when you talked about Concordia Lutheran, the first thing you said is, yeah, they won the team title. You talked a little bit about the athletes, but you didn't talk about like a certain stud athlete who, you know, went to Indiana University or something. You've been talking team this whole way through. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I think it's just always, I don't know, I've always been wanting to be invested in, you know, everyone around us. And I saw the value in that. You know, I think, you know, maybe, you know, we talked a little bit about my soccer career. You know, I was kind of, that was what I thought was going to be my path. And my freshman year, we were an amazing, what you call a freshman team. You know, we were all freshmen and we went undefeated and beat a team here in Fort Wayne called Canterbury, which is, you know, they're the program for soccer in Indiana. And, you know, that was a big thing. And then my sophomore year, I, you know, was part of a phenomenal team that won a sectional title. And I was kind of on that ascent, and we changed coaches, and I kind of got, you know, I was a guy that scored 9 or 10 goals as a sophomore and then wasn't even getting playing time as a junior, you know? And so I think maybe that's where I started to process, like, hey, like, I don't really like how we're setting up our team ideas here. So maybe it's a negative thing that kind of led me into really focusing on team. And I just didn't, I never felt like it was the best setup for our group. And we didn't have as much success on the soccer side of things after we kind of changed, you know, some of those models there early on. So, but even, you know, early on at Indiana Tech, you know, I saw, you know, Brad start a program, and while he was more distance oriented, that was kind of his focus. He was bringing in sprinters. He had really good throwers. He had two really good pole vaulters. And so I think that side of it, seeing like, hey, like you got to be a team to do well in college track and field. You know, and so I think maybe just seeing some glimpses of it here and there. But I like it. I like all the events. I, you know, as I got to grow, in track and field more, I've really grown an appreciation for things I could never do. You know, watching somebody throw the hammer is, just an amazing accomplishment. I couldn't get a stud to an Olympic level, but I love watching, you know, people compete at that level. Watching somebody run an all out 10K or even a marathon has become a real passion for me.
Yeah, so you lost me there. So as you went to marathon, I love 5K steeple. The hammer is one of my all time. I used to go when I coach, I'd always go to practice early to watch the hammer throwers. They're just one of the most fascinating events out there. Now you've mentioned and talked about recruiting a lot. However, to build a team from, you know, less than 40 people on the entire team to 14 national titles, something else has to be at play. What do you attest to a winning culture, a team winning culture that's winning the big trophy? What else is it that people can learn from what you've built there that's not recruiting? You can recruit the best kids in the nation and still not win the title. So there has to be more.
Yeah. I mean, I think along with recruiting, you have to recruit the right athletes. You know, I think early on we saw, or at least I saw, you know, I think it was just kind of a talent grab. Like you said, let's get all the best kids in here and then we'll just shake it up and hope that, you know, our end result is a championship. Well, that doesn't work. You've got to look a lot at personalities. And so I think as we recruited and as I would bring in those part-time assistants that were doing the same things that I was, you know, doing the previous years, it was a lot of talking about, okay, well, how does this person mix with who we already have on the roster? And are they going to be the right fit? Or is their personality going to, you know, you can have one or two personality conflicts that you can coach, but if everybody, you know, if it's just a whole, you know, a whole collection of people struggling on that side of it. So I think that's part of it. And then like I said, I never felt like I had all the answers. And I think our staff has always been that way, that we're not like, well, you know, this has to work for everyone. You know, I think from the time from what worked for me in high school did not work for my athletes at Muncie South. I came to Indiana Tech and kind of got closer to what worked for me in high school, but that was because my high school coach was coaching at Indiana Tech. And I was like, well, this worked, you know, he knows what he's doing. And then we had some success, but then I kind of started to create my own path, but I never felt like I knew exactly what I was doing. I think you're always kind of swimming and you're like, okay, well, you know, well, this worked for this person, but it didn't work for them. So how do I get them to that level? And I think trying to hire assistant coaches that had that same passion and had those same ideas that it doesn't have to be done one way was incredibly helpful. And so I've had some awesome assistant coaches over the year that have gone way above and beyond, you know, what you would ask of assistant coaches, you know, people that have traveled over an hour just to be on our staff, you know, every day back and forth, you know, people that had, you know, 40, 50, 60 an hour a week jobs. And so, yeah, you can't do it by yourself. It doesn't matter how good you are, or how much you think you can grind, but I think that side of it has really been helpful for me to have those people that shared that vision, but also brought their own ideas and unique experiences to our team.
What has the winning 14 titles? That's I mean, come on, man, that's amazing. That's, you don't have that many fingers. what growth has come from it? Has the school supported you in more coaching, like a more coaching staff and better supported coaching staff, professional development opportunities? How has that, your success on the track helped the program grow?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think early on we had no facility. So when Indiana Tech started the program, there was no outdoor. We were just going to use whatever track we could find in Fort Wayne, which there's a lot of them, but, and then indoor, we had a like poured polyurethane rubber about an inch thick around our basketball court. It was 142 meters. If you went off to the side, either way, you were on cement. So if you were wearing spikes, I mean, you were feet in the air, done. We could get maybe two hurdles in there, maybe. And then you were crashing into the wall. And so I think that led me to always have to be creative. You know, like we had a very old weight room when it started. Like we weren't selling anybody on facilities. We were selling them on, we're going to hustle. We're going to give you everything we can. We're going to be creative. And I think that stayed in at least my coaching model all the way up to today. Like there's got to be a better way to do this because we had nothing, you know? And so the school did support us. You know, we went from that poured polyurethane to a Mondo track then kind of around. So it's still 142, but at least it's track surface. And then we ended up moving into a place here in Fort Wayne called the Plex South, which is an old golf dome. And so it's kind of a collapsed air dome, but it's a full size soccer field under one dome. And so every day we had to go out there and lay cones out to set up our track. So we could get about 250 to 280 meters, depending on how you wanted to lay the turns. Course was never the same day to day. We were using benches as plyo boxes. We were landing on high jump mats. Like we had nothing, you know? And so when we won our first team title in 2013, we were in that same setup. We did not have our own track. And I'll just never forget an athlete that was like, I just overheard a conversation. They're like, man, Indiana Tech just won a national title with no track. Like we have no excuses. And, you know, and I've always, you know, said that to our current teams now, you know, I think it's hard to appreciate, you know, they weren't there in those old days. And, you know, in the Gulf Dome, that was 20 or 30 degrees in the middle of winter with, you know, a 250 loop that I laid down that was probably all over the place with cones. You know, you really learn to try some new things and be aggressive and try those out. So the school has helped us immensely. We have an outdoor complex of our own. We moved into a facility here in Fort Wayne called the Turnstone Center. That's been an amazing partner. They have been awesome to work with. And then we've just announced a groundbreaking of our own indoor track that will be available next December. And so the school has done an awesome job putting us in a position facility-wise as we've grown the team and had some success.
That's a great segue, because that's exactly where I was going, Doug. I appreciate that. Because so you're building a new indoor facility, which is, first of all, again, healthy things grow. So I love that the school saw you having success with very little, meaning facilities and coaching staff and budget probably even at that time has changed to it is today, and didn't just sit on its laurels and be like, well, what do you need an indoor facility for? You just won the title. You don't need a facility, but they continue to invest in you, and you've rewarded the school with many, many more titles, right? And now you're building your own indoor facility. And one of the things that fascinates me about this, Doug, this might be the only reason I asked you to be on the podcast, my friend, is along with announcing this new awesome indoor facility, they are going to name the facility the Doug Edgar Indoor Track Emporium or something, right? So I'm fascinated by this, because certainly plenty of amazing coaches have had facilities named after them, right? I think of Tennessee's track and Florida's track. They're all named after former amazing team championship winning coaches. Clyde Hart, the Clyde Hart Track Complex. But almost every one of them that I know of anyway had those named for them as they were in their late stage of their career, or if not after their career and sometimes in their life, right? You are extremely young. I love talking to young coaches at your age, because some of them think that they need to have their life figured out at this point. And I'm like, you know, think about this. You're 37. You've been coaching for, I don't know, what, 15-ish years?
Yeah, on and off, yeah.
You've been coaching for 15 years. You're 37. You're going to easily coach till you're 67. Let's be fair here. You've got at least two more lifetimes ahead of you coaching wise. Like, you are barely at the starting line, my friend, right? And yet you're going to have a building named after you. Now, I know my own ego, and ego's not a bad, we've talked about ego extensively in the past here on the podcast. Ego's not a bad thing. It can be a bad thing, but ego, actually, that's what helps drive self-worth and self-motivation and you know, competition and tenacity. So ego's not bad. We all have ego, and we all start out with good ego. But I would have to think, me personally, if I walk into a building every day called the Mike Cunningham Complex, There's a bit of me that believes I might sit on my laurels a little bit, that there's a like ego, like anybody wants to check me, I'll just like, you go check the name of the building. You know what I'm saying? How have you thought about, is any of this new to you? Are you like, oh yeah, I didn't thought about this at all. Or have you thought about this at all, about how you internally can still operate at a high level in a very grinding, hustling mentality on a day-to-day basis when you're going to have a palace named after you, my friend?
Well, it's going to be clean. I'll tell you that. We'll definitely take care of it. But
I agree with that. I know you will.
No, I think it's hard to wrap your head around until it's real. You know, I think that's, you know, we're still in the, you know, the groundwork level and those situations. And to me, it's, while obviously they've decided to make the addition to put my name on it, it's not me that has created that building. In my opinion, you know, I've been, you know, a piece, maybe a catalyst to what we've done here, but I've never scored a single point for this team, you know, and in those 14 titles, it's never been, well, what did Coach Edgar do on that day? You know, you have one or two decisions, you know, and obviously you kind of create a training model, but at the end of the day, it's athletes, it's other coaches, and it's those pieces that have really led us to have 14 national titles. And I'm in a lucky situation in that, you know, the largest donor for our track building is a very track centered person. They are very, you know, very Fort Wayne centric. They really believe in the things that Indiana Tech is doing in and out of the Fort Wayne community. And with their ability to stay anonymous, they, them and along with Indiana Tech, you know, felt the opportunity to to bless me with that, you know, just a huge blessing. I don't know how else to say it. I was definitely not expecting to hear that information when I walked into the meeting that day. My wife cried immediately when we found out the information, you know. And so it's one of those that it's an incredible honor, and I'm blessed, and I just feel like it's a representation of the over 1,000 athletes, you know, the 20, 30 coaches that have been here. And I'm just lucky that I've kind of been a piece of how that all has played out, you know? And so to me, it's not my building, it's Indiana Tech Track and Fields building. And I think with some of the things we're hoping to do honorment wise to our past athletes, that hopefully will ring true and what people feel when they enter the building. They won't feel like it's my building. They'll feel like it's an Indiana Tech Track and Field Hall of Fame kind of mentality as they enter the building, because that's really what it's about. It's not about anything I've done here. It's about these, you know, that we looked the other day, it's about 1,200 athletes I've brought into Indiana Tech, you know? And so, you know, I think that's something we really hope to shine through with this building.
Well, and to make sure, let me take a step back, Doug. I love that this is happening, even at this age and stage of your career, because, you know, I'm the biggest cheerleader there is for track coaches, and they're I can't even talk. See, I went to school in Alabama, so, you know, if I had an Indiana Tech degree, I'd probably be able to say this word. Being able to uplift coaches, I love that. Being able to honor coaches, I love that. I love that, Liberty just named their meet the Brant Tulsima Invitational, because Brant was a longtime coach there that helped build, much like you, helped saw that school go through building an outdoor complex and of course, a great indoor complex. So I love that. Like, more things need to be named after track coaches, in my opinion. It's just always interesting. And you're right. You made a great point there that, you know, until you're in it, like, it's one thing to be announced and everything, but until every day you pass by the Dud Gedger, you know, sportsplex or whatever, you will see. But it just always fascinates me about, like, you know, the human psychology of, you know, you seem to be a very grind it and hustling type of coach for what you've done at Indiana Tech and through your entire career, even through your athletic career. My desire is that you don't say, well, I have arrived. You know, we've seen a lot of coaches and athletes in the pro levels that I've arrived. I got, you know what, actually, I have a best example for this, and it's me. My whole coaching career was to get to the SEC. And so when I got to the SEC, I literally was like, oh, I have arrived. When in fact, it was my ninth or 10th year coaching. I should have had a longer career there, right? But it was like, I've arrived. I've done, I finally, like, my identity was built on being an SEC coach. And so I don't think I coached all that well those last couple of years before I moved on to other things. That's what I immediately thought. I was like, with you, Doug, it's like, man, I don't want you to think, because you see your name in the biggest letters you've maybe have ever seen your name, that you've arrived. You've got to always continue to hustle. You've won 14. Well, you got to win 40 more, brother. You know, so that's why I was just interested if you'd even had thought about that. Along with this, so do you get a sense that you're locked into Indiana Tech? Like, have they just given you a lifetime contract? Because you cannot go coach somewhere else and have a meet at your facility with a rival team. You know what I'm saying? Indiana Tech to the day it's done.
I think that's a tough sell, you know, and obviously I'm lucky that Indiana Tech's in Fort Wayne. I grew up in Fort Wayne. My wife's family's from less than 3 hours away from here. And so we're in a unique situation that I get to do all this in my home city. You know, I think a lot of people get an opportunity like this, but it's, you know, they have to move or go to a different coast. And we've been lucky that we get to have our family around us and support us. And we can still, you know, my kids can see their grandparents and we can do all of those situations. So definitely, you know, don't want to ever lose a conference championship in a building with your name on it. I think that if anything, it adds pressure to the group. You know, I think you talked about, you know, resting on your laurels. I think having a building like that means, like, we, you know, I got to keep winning. You know, I know you had Nick Dotson on the podcast there a couple of weeks ago. You know, Nick's built a great program there in Florida. You've got some other really strong programs coming up at the NAI level. And so I think that continues to keep you motivated every year. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got, you know, my good friend Brian Whitlock down in Texas at Wayland Baptist. You know, he's got an amazing program and you know, we talk all the time, and it's just, you know, that desire to win is, I don't see that going away for me based on this building. I'm highly competitive when it comes to winning at the end, but I think it'll be an awesome experience for athletes to have something of their own.
Well, I think, you know, the proof is in the pudding, right? And now that I think about it, with 14 titles, after your fourth or fifth or sixth one, you easily could have been, I have a right. I mean, how many people, first of all, this is what I love about team titles. They're so hard to win. Conference, national, doesn't matter. Winning is hard. I don't care where you're at. So to do one, like, you are already on rarefied air. You win one team title. 99% coaches will never get to that, right? On that fourth, fifth, sixth one, you could easily be like, oh, I've arrived. Like, come on, man. I could fill up a whole hand here. I'm Michael Jordan on this thing, right? But yeah, here we are 14 years or 14 titles later. So that means you had to have continued, like, okay, well, how do we win the next one? And I bet, I'm going to ask this question instead of just betting. Each one of those teams, I bet they were fairly, I'm going to say radically, but from one to one, maybe not so much, but there were a lot of differences in those teams that won the titles, right? Like the makeup of the team, the personality of the team, were they pretty different each time?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've always kind of been a speed power based program. You know, I think sprints have been a big score for us, hurdles, you know, the long jump and the high jump, but we've been able to have some success across some of those other events. You know, some years we'd have some really good distance squads, and other years we were maybe a little bit more pole vault or throws heavy helping us out. And so I think just coming back to that idea of continuing to develop a complete team. And if we don't have something, and that's why we lost, you know, there were obviously years in there where we lost by a point or two, or this didn't go our way. It's like, all right, well, you know, what didn't we have this year that we need to get for next year? And what are we graduating? And it's just always that eye of, you know, let's look at the recruiting board. What's next? What do we got to fill? And how do we keep this thing going? Cause it's no fun to go to that meet and not win, you know, I think as someone that gets to coach both genders, I think that's even harder. Like when we've had one gender win and the other one not win, and you've got a 13-hour bus ride home, those are very different bus rides. You know, we've had a men's team, you know, basically pull a hamstring on the anchor leg of the 4x4 that all we had to do is basically finish and we would have won a team title. And we had to ride that bus all the way home, you know, while we had some success, maybe on the women's meet. That year was a great women's meet for us, you know? And so I think that's the hard thing that a lot of track coaches have to deal with, is you have essentially two teams competing at the national championship often. And so trying to keep both of those teams, their mentality after that meet in check and how they feel is always a challenge. But it's a very different feeling when you walk away winning versus, well, we could have won, but.
That's an interesting conversation to have. We're not going to have it because we're going to move for time wise. We're going to move into some other topic, but that topic there about, you know, track coaches, we're coaching men's team and women's teams a lot of the times. And you're right. That bus ride, like when you described that, I was like, in my head, I was like, oh my God, that'd be terrible. Cause you want to be extremely excited, but you're also extremely hurt for your other team, where a football team, I guess, ride or die together. You don't have to worry about, you know, the special teams team didn't lose, you know, we all lost or we all won together. That's really, your baseball's on its own, it's softball, etc. That's interesting. Yeah. But you mentioned, you know, the recruiting board and continue recruiting. Now, one of the things, and I talked about, you know, I live on Twitter, so I'm social media. I'm a huge proponent. You've heard me talk about it in the past here, ad nauseum. I am a big proponent of positive social media. And interestingly, with your staff, seems to be, and what I want to know is if this is by design or if this is just by happenstance, your coaching staff seems to be very active on social media, specifically Twitter, because that's where I live. Is that on purpose for recruiting and brand building? You know, that's part of it too. Or is that just, you know, you hired guys and gals that just happen to also like Twitter or whatnot?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're lucky now that we have some coaches on staff that are very social media savvy. You know, I would say I use it a lot, but I wouldn't say I'm good at it. But I think for us, we, you know, as a small school, you one, have to build a brand. And then two, you have to let everyone else know what that brand looks like, sounds like, feels like. You know, I think we've only had a program for 12 or 13 years. We're a smaller school. You know, kids don't grow up saying, well, I'm definitely going to Indiana Tech, you know? And so you have to find ways to get your product in front of them. And obviously most people are gravitating right now towards social media is a really easy way to get that product out there. And so we feel like, you know, as far as athlete development and what we do and how many people we're willing to give opportunities to and the things that we're willing to try, we want to kind of go to where the athletes live. And oftentimes that's social media. So it is definitely a push for us and our staff to get that information out there. When we have good results, we want, you know, people to know, oh, wow, you know, Indiana Tech has really run this or jumped this or thrown this. And maybe that just gets that hook that, hey, you know, let me, you know, that athlete drops in your DMs and says, hey, you know, I'm kind of interested. I'm still looking for a school. You know, I think that's where social media has been really helpful for us, is just we're trying to brand. You know, it seems like I've been doing this forever, but you're never going to be known to everyone at a school of our size. Like that's just not where we're going to be. We're going to have to continue. You know, it may take 40 or 50 more years before everybody knows the Indiana Tech track and field is a good brand and what it can do for them.
Well, you said you don't think you're very good at social media. I think you're terrible. You know why?
Why?
Because you post some of the most amazing food pictures. And it seems like only when I'm extremely hungry.
There you go.
You, the wings, all the other food. You're like, you remind me of Devin West. I don't know if you know Devin. He's now at the University of Georgia as an assistant coach and recruiting coordinator. And he's famous for, on his social media, it's all the food, you know, it's perfectly state. So yeah, you're terrible, man, because I am always hungry when I look through Twitter, when I see your posts, man. You must be, is that the kind of a passion of yours? Like, you seem to enjoy cooking and maybe specifically grilling.
Yeah, I think that's one of like my wife and I's passion is just kind of that we've kind of become those, you know, prototypical foodies. Like when we go to a city, like I really enjoy like investing in the food culture, you know, and kind of trying to learn the city through food. And I think that kind of then translates to things we try back at home. And we've got four young kids. And so trying to expand palates is always an interesting thing as a parent there. And so I think we always are just trying things, but yeah, I love anything that involves the grill. You know, wings, meat, steak, let's do it. So my wife is the cooker and the baker of the family. Like, just let me do whatever the meat product is for dinner and I'll get out of your way for everything else.
Well, I never do this, but next time I'm in Fort Wayne, I'm inviting myself over and I want to partake. I want to feel like I'm connected to the social media of you by actually partaking.
That's it. Let's bring it in.
Well, as we wrap up today, Doug, you know, as we talked about social media and stuff like that, you know, social media, I think, is 100% a positive thing. Let me state that differently. It can and should be 100% a positive thing because it's social media, right? It's a communication tool. That's how I look at it. That's how I look at podcasts and things like that. It's all about communication. You talked about back in the day when you were recruiting, you know, writing letters, and I'm sure that still goes on. But now, like, I can get in touch with me personally. I can get in touch with almost any coach in the world through some form of social media. And you as a coach can connect with a recruit almost immediately, or you know, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like 2 degrees to get to an athlete, right? I can find a coach that coaches him or her, and I can reach out. So that's why I love social media. And social media sometimes is good, bad in regards to warts and all. And recently, I guess by the time you're listening to this, it's about 2 months ago, you had a post that maybe was warts and all here on this. You had a post that maybe some people took, I don't know how to actually put it. I don't want to repeat the tweet. It's since been deleted, but basically you had a recruit that called you and maybe wasn't actually as respectful as maybe the recruit should have been. And maybe your response wasn't as great as it could have and should have been. Talk to me a little bit about not necessarily that post, but you know, why, and what maybe lessons did you learn from that?
Yeah. I mean, I think as a coach, you're always looking for growth moments. And I said, I'm lucky that my wife over the years has proofread some tweets and maybe things that, you know, in the moment you get really upset and you want to send things out. You know, I think the educational piece, as far as levels, I think we've got, you know, some coaches that are doing a really good job kind of showing what it takes to compete at each level. And in this case, you know, the athlete felt they were at a level higher than either NAI or D3 across the board. It wasn't an Indiana Tech thing. They weren't saying that Indiana Tech couldn't get them there. They were saying neither of these divisions were even, you know, on their level. And obviously they were still a developing athlete that was behind the national standards for both of those divisions. So I think, you know, as a coach, you find better or more, I don't even know, better ways to get that information out, you know, to recruits, and maybe it's not our job to educate them. Maybe that's, you know, a different person or a different service. But I think just understanding the benefits of small school track and field and education, you know, to completely write off a scholarship, an educational opportunity, a team opportunity because of a team's division, I guess just always seemed really silly to me, you know. And maybe that's because I am the small school guy and I haven't been part of the big school, but you've got any high schools that could compete in D1 conferences. You've got, you know, D3 schools that could, you know, compete here. You know, you've got a school like Grand Valley State up in Michigan that's the size of every D1 school in the country, but competes in Division 2 for whatever reason, you know. And so, you know, I think just understanding how track and field works at the collegiate level, that maybe is a struggle for a lot of juniors and seniors. You know, we're lucky enough, like this weekend, we get to compete at the University of Kentucky. You know, Coach Lonnie Green has been an awesome champion for small schools. He's given us the opportunity. We're incredibly grateful. You know, Texas Tech, same thing. They've allowed small schools into these larger meets. You know, Coach Holloway at Florida, you know, Florida Relays in most years is an open competition, you know, and getting athletes to understand that. And track and field of all of the collegiate sports, division is really irrelevant. It's finding the right fit, the best financial fit, the best academic fit, you know, and a coach that you feel like can get you to whatever your goals are. But at the same time, to me, I would want to have success, you know, and want to say, okay, well, what does my mark mean? Like, am I doing all this to maybe even just get to the conference meet, or could I run that same mark in a different division and qualify for nationals and have a different experience, you know? And so I think, you know, a lot of that part of social media is just trying to find that fine line of how do you put out a piece of education without being super specific, but still get that information out there. And I think always editing yourself, you can always do better. You know, I think in the moment, you know, being upset or, you know, taking something personal, even though it was geared towards, you know, essentially 500 schools, you always are going to take that, you know, kind of insulate it and say, well, you know, what do you mean you wouldn't be interested in either of these divisions? Like, do you know what these people are doing? You know, you've got professional runners coming out of these divisions. So I think that's where it gets hard as a coach for people to not understand, you know, how open track and field is compared to some of our other collegiate sports.
Yeah. And I agree 100%. I've said for a long time, you want to go see maybe some of the best coaches out there, go look at the D3 national meet. And 90% of those kids were not Division I material or scholarship material. Maybe 90% is pretty high, but a majority of those kids were not scholarship material athletically. But go look at the D3 national results. they're pretty stinking fast and jump far and throw far and run fast. So I'm 100% with you on that. Do you have any, you know, I talked about earlier, you know, now that we're, you know, 15 years in the game and we've recruited 1,000+ athletes to that school, that's really quite remarkable, Doug. We have perspective. We can look back and kind of draw parallels. Thinking about the example that led to this tweet, earlier you talked about how you kind of, I'm going to say it in my words, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, how you kind of blew off Anderson for a Ball State and IPFW and things like that. Do you draw any parallels as the athlete side of it? Thinking about what that athlete said, which I agree with what you're saying. She needs perspective. Of course, she was probably 17 or 18 years old. I don't know how much perspective I can expect from a 17, 18 year old. I'm 46 and I need more perspective for crying out loud. But can you think about, you know, almost like put yourself in every kid, not necessarily this one individual, but every kid out there that 17, 18 year olds and says, oh, NAIA Division III, you know, first of all, I don't see that on Saturday when I watch the LSU game or the Troy University game, the best university in the world. Can you start now that you have perspective, kind of look back and see like, okay, maybe I can understand where she was coming from. I don't agree with it, but I can understand.
Yeah. And I think that probably comes back to just the idea of why we try to be so open on our social media. You know, mm-hmm. I think all of our coaches are open with their personal lives and open with how we recruit and what we do to try to give athletes a glimpse of like, okay, like you think this is where you have to be, and this is the only place to do track and field. Well, here's some things that you can do at this level. Here's athletes that have done it for us and what that looked like. And here's a meet that, you know, this athlete went to. And, you know, if you go to the all divisions list, you know, here's, you know, we had a women's 4x2 that was top 5-6 in the country at one point, a couple of years ago. And so I think just trying to, like I said, walk that fine line of education versus, you know, being the old man screaming at somebody on your lawn, like, you know, listen to me, like, I'm going to tell you there's some good stuff out here, but, you know, trying to, you know, do that maybe in a more positive way, you know, and I think that's the area where we got to continue to grow, or at least I need to continue to grow, is how do you positively get that information out there, being a little bit more general, being a little bit more broad, learning from that experience, but still not being afraid to say that our product's pretty damn good and that D3 and NAIA D2 on the whole, I mean, those are marks that are going into a lot of, you know, big conferences and scoring points. Those are teams that could win nationals or win conference meets at the very least in other divisions. And so I think that's probably the biggest push for me, is just showing that product can be the right fit for a lot of athletes. And just because you run X time, that doesn't mean you have to go to X school. That might not be the best fit for you. That might not be the coach that's the right fit for you. It might not be the academic program. Maybe you need to be in a class of 50 people, not 500. And I think writing off before, you know, me not writing off an athlete is hopefully getting them to also not write us off before they at least give us a chance. You know, if you tour the campus, you meet the staff, you meet the team, and you're like, not the right fit, we can 100% understand that. You know, I think it's always hard when somebody won't let you in the door to give you, at least give you the 5 minutes to say, hey, this is what we could do for you.
Yeah, I think what you're describing there is pride. I don't know if versus is the right put her together there, but pride versus humility, in the sense of the pride of not only your program, your school, and your division, NAIA, you 100% absolutely could and should have that pride. You have earned it. With zero titles, you have still earned it to be proud of what you are building and have built and the students that you represent. And then the other side of that, you'd mentioned, you know, when I talk about the humility side, you'd mentioned like, maybe it's not my job to teach. I don't know. You know, there's that humility, like maybe it's not even my, you know, maybe I had that conversation with that recruit. I have to assume you probably have that conversation several times. I have to assume, based on the whole do you want or bust mentality that, you know, that is portrayed out there, of that humility of like, maybe it's not my job to teach that person or teach the greater body. I think maybe it actually is maybe your responsibility to teach that person individually when he or she says, hey, I'm better than NAIA, I should be Division I or whatever. And they're like, well, you know, hey, give me 2 minutes. Let me tell you what kind of marks we have on our team. You tell me where you think you would fit in on our team, for crying out loud, you know, that kind of thing. So when you're actually making the tweet, and we'll wrap up here, Doug, because I don't want to spend too much time into it. I just really love and again, so appreciative of your humbleness. I mean, you 100% did not and do not have to talk about the, you know, while everything lives in on the Twitterverse, right? You still don't have to talk about it. And so I really do appreciate your openness and authenticity. That really says a lot about your character, in my opinion. So I do appreciate you even having this conversation. When you made the post, it appears that roughly, I'm no statistician here, but roughly 50% were like, yeah, Doug, that's right. And the other 50% were, you're basically the devil, which welcome to social media. You're either non-existent or you're the devil. That's kind of sometimes how social media works, right? Did you expect, so when you hit send, and did Samantha review this tweet?
She didn't get that one. So
I wanted you off the hook on that one, Samantha, because yep, he had said you sometimes read. On that one. I was like, let's get her off the hook here. But when you hit send, what was your expectation of responses, if at all? You know, I tweet 50 times a day, so I don't really have an expectation I'll get any responses. That may have been as well, but what were you thinking was going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, and obviously you're at the time, you're just thinking there's no way anyone could ever believe that these two divisions are not, you know? And so I think you, in my head, I felt most people, at least people that were, had coached collegiate track and field or high school and had seen, you know, the marks that those kinds of levels had put up, that they would be like, yeah, like, I mean, at least listen to, you know, one school, there's gotta be some school, you know, what is that 700 schools between those two divisions? Like there's gotta be one school in there that might be the right fit for you. And so I think from my side of it, I think it was trying to come at it from that side of, it was like, at least listen to an opportunity. I guess if I had had, you know, 30 scholarships, you know, obviously I went to a D3 school, you know, so it's not, you know, non-scholarship obviously, but if I had had 30 schools say, hey, you know, we might be able to give you a little bit of money to run in track, I think I would have at least listened to that, mm-hmm. to that side of the piece and at least heard them out. And again, maybe you're not ready to hear it at that moment in time. Like I wasn't, you know, with Anderson right away and maybe it grows later. Ironically for us, I probably had 70 to 80 recruits or high school coaches that sent us stuff and said, hey, this kid would be great for your division. This kid would be great for your school, on our side of it. And it ended up being a big positive, on our recruiting side of it. Obviously, you know, don't want to single a kid out, you know, from that side of it, you know, I think being more vague or just suggesting, hey, you know, here's what the product is and maybe taking it, thinking more on it before you put it out there, maybe is always a good positive of like, okay, how could I word this to get the idea across of, hey, D3 and NAIA track is really good. D2 track is really good. You know, be open to those ideas, you know, and maybe just being a little bit smarter about how you put that out. Like you said, into the Twitterverse, it's 140 characters or whatever we're at now, 280. I don't know what we're at anymore, but you know, those characters rarely have context to them. And I think that's where, you know, maybe it struggled. It's hard to then respond. And, you know, if I had just had the conversation with anybody in that group that disagreed with me one-on-one, I think saying it like this, like, hey, like, you think how many athletes in the country wouldn't have a good experience at NAI or D3? I would say very few, you know? And so I think coming at it, had you worded it that way, you know, it comes down to your wording and your delivery in a lot of cases. And how do you do that better is something you always have to do as a coach.
Yeah, I think you hit one of the nails on the head there. Context matters. And also to me, intent matters. It doesn't, now we hear the kind of the backstory. So now we're hearing context to it. Not a single part of me believes that the intent was to shame or blame this individual. It's kind of a little bit more authentic when you think about, you know, we talk about social media being only positive, like, you know, don't look at social media because you only see all the great things. You never see the struggling, you know, you have kids, no one ever posts a picture of their baby crying and things like that. You post all these amazing track photos of your kids doing hurdles over the pillows and stuff. I love that. But here you are actually using social media more of how I think it could and should be. And you're kind of bearing your soul. Like, here's a frustration I have. Here's someone that I wanted to talk about an opportunity and blew me off without even listening. It was a frustration. Like I kind of liked it in that sense of like, it's not always the pot. It's not, you're not only tweeting when you sign a big kid, like you just did, by the way, holy cow. you know, so it was actually kind of the bearing your soul. Like, I'm frustrated. I'm going to put that on social media as well. So I think intent matters with it as well. And I don't think that now having context around, I don't think the intent was ever negative.
I don't begrudge the athlete for wanting whatever they feel like is the best experience. I think it's just, you know, having that respect to at least hear somebody out and see where that is. And like you said, educationally, I had, mm-hmm. you know, no desire for that particular person to feel any type of situation. I think it was more just speaking, try, you know, again, being more broad always seems like it helps in situations like that. But I think the situation is obviously still repeating over and over and over again, you know, with athletes that are missing opportunities that may be the right fit for them. And I think taking, you know, a 20-minute phone call, an unofficial visit, a virtual visit, you know, I think those opportunities that a lot of athletes just say, well, you know, like you said, the D1 or bust, or I have to go to this school. Well, why? Like, why do you have to do that in track and field? Like, there's so many other opportunities or ways that you can get to the goal that you want. You know, at the end of the day, you want to get a great education, pay as little for it as possible, have an awesome track experience, you know, and obviously meet some friends and grow personally along the way. And I think, you know, there's any number of paths that you can take, and it doesn't have to happen at X, Y, or Z school. But to at least open up your mind to those are options for you out there. You know, every athlete in this country that runs track and field has at least 10 to 20 schools, no matter what their marks are, that would be interested in them. And so it has nothing to do with your marks. Some of our most successful athletes, you know, the girl that owns all my school records in the sprints was the fourth best athlete in her recruiting class, you know? And so had she said, you know, well, you know, we're not good enough or whatever, like, you know, maybe, but you know, she ended up becoming with development, you know, the top athlete I've ever had the privilege of coaching. So awesome. I think just being open was probably what I had hoped people would gain from it. Yeah. Like I said, obviously it can be a little bit polarizing once you get on social media and you take out the context and all the backstory and all those other pieces.
Yeah, it's only 280 characters, man. That's the tough part. But man, Doug, as we end today, first of all, you notice we've been an hour and a half. For you listening, Doug told me at the beginning during our pre-interview, he's like, look, man, I'm not much of a talker, ain't much, you know, I've been at one school forever. This won't be that long. And I was like, oh, Doug, you don't know my skill set. I can get out this journey of yours. And I am just so humbled that you would stay visit with us today and sit down with us and describe this journey. I love the, you know, it's awesome because we can look back at it now. I love that you didn't finish college track and field as an athlete. I really do. That, again, all you listening out there, that if you want to become a head coach of a program somewhere, if you want to make it to college coaching ranks, you want to win national titles, it does not have to be some curated, talking about social media, right? Some curated, everything is perfect, laid out, and it's just a stair step up. It's ups and downs. And so, you know, Doug, for you to be here today, you know, almost burying your soul, if you will, but, you know, being open and authentic, man, again, that says, to me, it says so much about your character. And I'm just so humbled that you would sit down with us today and share that journey.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you. By the time you're listening to this now, you're getting ready to go to Bismarck, I think, right? For nationals.
It's going to be cold and snowy.
I love that facility because it's all ours, which is why I love it very much. And that coach is awesome. I love him too. So good luck. I'm going to say this is weird because of how we do podcasts. Good luck next week at nationals. even though it's really January. So Doug, thank you so much, man. Have an awesome day.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. What an incredible journey Coach has been on. So awesome to hear their story in their own words. Tremendous proof of the positive effects coaches make on a daily basis. Help us spread the word of this great journey by sharing on your favorite social media channel. And don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the podcast. You just might get a shout out on a future episode. That's it for today. Join us next week when we'll connect you with another amazing coach.